Log Talk Radio.
And being thrown through the glass window of the barbershop on WWF Superstars, it's Saturday Morning Wrestling. It's Jim Valley, and we are live each and every Saturday, 8:30 my time, 11:30 your time, or download it whenever you please because you're too damn lazy to listen to the show. Just don't even bother to listen live. Hey, couple of housekeeping things that we have to deal with. A little disappointed this morning, a little bummed out, a little disappointed. For some reason, Queen Kong, Matilda the Hun, Glow, Dee Booher, Deanna Booher, I don't know where she went. She disappeared on me. We were chatting, we were in contact, everything was moving forward, and then suddenly we lost communication. And at first I was worried because she's been suffering from some health problems. And she's doing a GoFundMe because she's suffering from lupus and some symptoms dealing with lupus. And so she needs some funding, and we were going to promote that on the show. But we lost contact with her, and I don't know where she is. And then I see last night on Twitter and Facebook that she was out at the taping for Women of Wrestling. Wow. So she's fine. That's the good news. The bad news is either she hasn't been online. I mean, she is older, so she isn't probably always plugged in on the social media, but, you know, she was out, so maybe she needed a rest. I don't know. Maybe she didn't want to do the show anymore. Maybe she hates me and hates America and hates the children and the troops, which is really the only reason why you wouldn't do the show. Because she hates America. Anyway, we'll try to get her on. I don't know, maybe. I don't know. Who knows what happened? But the good news is at least that she's okay. She's doing fine. Because, again, she was out and about last night going to see David McLean. And if you read her book, I will say this. Her book is fascinating. Her book, she's got a book out. And it's got a lot of the real inside story of Glow. Because for the longest time, I've been, for years, even, you know, you listen to, if you're a Torch VIP member, you know that I do the Total Chaos show that was in the 2000s. And it, I tried for the longest time to get David McLean, because he tried yet again with an iteration of WOW, the Women of Wrestling in the 2000s. They did a pay-per-view and everything, and I tried and tried and tried to get him on the show, on Total Chaos at the time. And he would not do the interview. He just wouldn't do the interview. I could never get him, pin him down for an interview. And now that I read the book by Queen Kong, Matilda the Hun, now I understand why she wouldn't do the, why he wouldn't do the interview. Because basically, according to Matilda the Hun, in her book, she claims that David McLean and the other producer slash owner of Glow were basically using it as a dating service, that they would hit on all of the women and try to sleep with all the women and give them pushes based on who slept with whom. And at least that's what she alleges in her book. It's a pretty fascinating read. If you ever wanted to know what happened with Glow, you could watch the documentary. The documentary is great, and it kind of hints a little bit about some of the hanky-panky behind the scenes at Glow, but Matilda the Hun goes all out about what happens in Glow, and it's a book for adults. Let's just put it that way. If you are devoutly religious, out of respect for your beliefs, I would not read the Matilda the Hun book if you are you know, take it very personally, which, you know, just trying to respect that. But yeah, it's a very adult book. And if we do have Queen Kong on the show, parental guidance will be suggested, just because that's just the story of her life. Anyway, so no Queen Kong today, but what we do have is we have David Chappell from MidAtlanticGateway.com. So we'll talk some Mid-Atlantic wrestling today. And we'll talk about the days and the glory days of Mid-Atlantic wrestling, of Johnny Valentine and Rick Steamboat and Jay Youngblood and Ric Flair and Roddy Piper and Wahoo McDaniel and so many others. So we'll talk about all of that. And you can, of course, always dial up at 515-605-9345. I'm still not used to the new number. Sounds odd. But anyway, so it's 515-605-9345. Coming up next, I want to talk about the WWE video game that's coming out and some of the downloadable content, some of the old-time wrestlers in that. That's kind of a controversy. We'll talk about some that and some more stuff coming up next Saturday Morning Wrestling. It's Jim Valley on the PWTorchLiveCast.com.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
And we're back on the PW Torch livecast. It's Jim Valley each and every Saturday morning here live. By the way, I know that I've only been back 2 weeks. Well, guess what? I'm going to be gone the next couple of weeks as well. I'm going to Florida for a wedding. So I won't be here next week. So I don't know what they're going to do. Sorry about the way back playback thing. I mean, it's good to have some content. Maybe turn you on to what we're doing if you're a VIP member. And you can listen to each and every week Pat McNeil and I do an hour or so with a classic pay-per-view or classic content from the WWE Network. And this week, this month, we are doing Starrcade 1999. What an awful show that is. We let people vote on it, and they chose Starrcade 1999. I think they did it just to mess with us. So that's going on. If you're a VIP member, check it out each and every week. Pat McNeil and I, we watch it in real time, so you can watch along with us and get our comments and our thoughts. And you know, some of it's funny, some of it's serious, a lot of it is context as far as what was happening in the world of wrestling as this was being taped. So if you're a newer fan, you can kind of get an idea. You know, like I said, the context, what was going on with some of these shows. What were they thinking? To quote the angry video game nerd. But we'll give you sort of those ideas and stuff. But it's Way Back Playback. It's each and every week with Pat McNeil and myself, if you're a Torch VIP member. So be sure and check that out if you haven't already, or it's a good reason to sign up and be a Torch VIP member. Thanks last week, by the way, for all the Bruce Pritchard love. Good numbers for the Bruce Pritchard show last week, and of course he's very controversial. If he was in Zoolander, it's Bruce Pritchard. He's so hot right now. He's just so hot right now with all the controversy. But I wanted to avoid the controversy. I want to talk about wrestling just because it's a tale as old as time with the newsletters and wrestlers and people involved in wrestling. It's Hatfield and McCoy's. They've never gotten along and they never will, and it's really just that simple. And there's no need to go into all of the issues and all the problems because that's just the way it is, baby. So, anyway. I want to mention a couple of things that they have officially announced that San Antonio, Texas is going to be the host for this year's Royal Rumble. And it's going to be the 20th anniversary of the last time they were in San Antonio for the Royal Rumble. And that was 1997, so that was Shawn Michaels, coming back and regaining the championship from Sid. And it was also the Royal Rumble where they had all of those the Mexican stars, all the stars from Mexico. They had Perro Aguayo, and probably the funniest thing in that Royal Rumble is, as you know, you've got to throw someone over the top rope and out to the floor to eliminate someone. And Mil Máscaras was in the Royal Rumble, and Mil Máscaras has a reputation for, even at age 75, whatever he is now, he's very protective of his gimmick, he's very protective of his image, he's very protective of everything, and he's never been a very popular guy in the wrestling business for that reason. He never really sold a lot, he never gave a lot to a lot of opponents, and people always got frustrated with him. But Mil Máscaras, and he must have been, I guess, in his 50s in 1997, so still past his expiration date, and Mil Máscaras would not go over the top rope, would not be eliminated in the Royal Rumble. He refused. So instead, he decides to get up on the top turnbuckle and do a plancha onto someone, do a cross body block onto someone on the floor. I forget who, but so he had to eliminate himself, which to me is worse, because it makes you look like you're stupid, like you don't understand the rules of the Royal Rumble. So, yeah, if you get a chance on that, we should probably do that for the Wayback Playback. We should do the 1997 Royal Rumble if people would vote for it. That's something to think about if Pat McNeil is listening. We should definitely do that. Another thing that's coming out, WWE 2K17, the annual video game. I haven't gotten a WWE video game in a few years. I forget which is the last one I got. 13, maybe? Maybe 13? 12? I don't know. It's been a while. I definitely haven't got one for the current generation of systems. I definitely haven't done that. But, you know, they announced last week the DLC and the downloadable content, the extra wrestlers that you can get if you pay extra for it, because that's the gig now, is to nickel and dime people in video games, and that's been the name of the game since Farmville was popular on Facebook. I don't even think your mom plays Farmville anymore, does she? I don't know. But anyway, they announced The Godfather and Papa Shango. They announced Eddie Guerrero. They announced Kerry Von Erich, who's in the game. And I need to just get off Twitter. I need to stop looking at the Twitter. It's driving me crazy because all the kids, and I get this, because Kerry Von Erich has been dead a long time. This part I understood. There are a lot of kids who did not know who Kerry Von Erich was. And that's fine. I get that. You know, I mean, they haven't been watching very long, and who knows how much time that they need to waste watching wrestling and all the old school wrestling and stuff that isn't their generation. And wrestling is very much something you get into when you're young, and then you just have a lot of nostalgia for the wrestling when you were young. But they didn't know Kerry Von Erich is, and that's fine. I mean, he did kill himself in 93. He hasn't been, you know, relevant in 30 years, if not longer. 32 years, I guess, is when it's been that long since he won the title. But the NWA title from Ric Flair in Texas Stadium. But there were kids just saying, we don't need any of these old wrestlers. They're talking about Papa Shango being old and Jacqueline being old and everybody being old. And I was just like, just shoot me. Little buggers telling me what I could like. Get off my lawn. They probably never even played WrestleFest. But yeah, they wanted the kids, they want more NXT talent and less of the dudes who were, you know, legendary, the vintage people. Even there were even people who did not know who Eddie Guerrero was. And I guess it's been a while since Vicky's been on television, and I guess it's been a while since they've run. I mean, they did recently actually with the Latin History Month. They did recently run some Eddie Guerrero stuff, but I don't think they did it before the people were going off on Twitter about, oh, who are these old people? Don't need any more old people. Makes me feel old. I actually think it's cool that Kerry Von Erich's in the game. I think it's pretty exciting myself. But what do I know? I'm just a dumb guy. But yeah, I thought it was cool that some of those people were in the game. But what do I know? A lot of people were asking for China. That makes sense because she's passed away, so she's new and hot and everything. But yeah, everyone was freaking out about, you know, they didn't know who Ivory was. They didn't know who anybody was. They were like, who are these people? Greg Valentine's in the game. Oh, yeah, someone didn't know Brutus Beefcake. Brutus Beefcake's in the game. They're like, who is Brutus Beefcake? Which kind of surprised me because you figure they know who Hulk Hogan is. And in my mind, just where there's Hulk Hogan, there's Brutus Beefcake. Right? Because Hogan needed someone to carry his bags for him. So it just seems odd that you'd know Hogan and you wouldn't know Brutus Beefcake. Just seems odd to me. Kids these days. Oh, well, I was the same way. They say that youth is wasted on the young. And it is just wrestling. It's not that big of a deal, but the bastards were pissing me off. This show has become, Jim Valley just complains about getting older, hasn't it? Hasn't it? Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. It's Saturday Morning Wrestling. It's Jim Valley, and we are live here on Blog Talk Radio each and every Saturday, except for next Saturday. And coming up, we're going to talk to David Chappell, not Dave Chappelle, completely different guy. But we're going to talk to him about Mid-Atlantic Gateway, all the legendary angles and stuff that happened during the Mid-Atlantic days that you know and love. We'll talk about Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest and much more coming up here on Saturday Morning Wrestling.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link, and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you.
It's the PW Torch Livecast. It's Jim Valley, Saturday Morning Wrestling, each and every Saturday from 8:30 Pacific, 11:30 on the East Coast. You can join us live and call in at 515-605-9345 or tweet me at Jim Valley, or you can email at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to talk to David Chappell from Mid-Atlantic Gateway, talk about all those great Mid-Atlantic memories of Baron Von Raschke and Johnny Weaver and Wahoo McDaniel and Greg Valentine and Johnny Valentine, Ric Flair, Rick Steamboat, Jay Youngblood, and so many more. So we'll talk to him, and you can dial in at 515-605-9345 if you like, or tweet me at Jim Valley, or you can think they're at MA Gateway on Twitter, I believe is where Mid-Atlantic Gateway is. You can follow them on the Twitter machine or email this morning at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. One of the things that everyone is talking about right now is the TNA wrestling and whether or not TNA is going to be around as far as funding goes, because they just have not been able to find a funding source for a number of years now, and they've just been going through money after just so much money. They've thrown away so much money. And it's crazy to think that TNA has been around for 14 years, since 2002. It doesn't feel like it. But they've got a long history. I mean, technically, I guess they're vintage in some ways of the early stuff. I mean, TNA, I remember getting the first few pay-per-views because they were once a week. They were like, what, $10? Something like that. And you got an out like 90 minutes of wrestling, and they weren't the worst shows in the beginning. They weren't the best shows either, but they weren't the worst shows. With Ken Shamrock, I remember when he won the Royal Rumble or whatever they called it to become the NWA World Champion. Scott Hall and X-Pac, they made appearances. Remember the Johnsons? Richard and Rod Johnson? They took the Power Twins and put them in flesh-colored outfits that went from head to toe. And they were... See, it was a penis joke, you see, because I don't know why. Sometimes I think, like, wrestling promoters think that we're all just idiots. That we're all just stupid. There are times when I don't know, just go, who would want to watch this? But it'll be interesting to see if TNA Wrestling is going to stick around or go away, or if it's going to evolve, or what's going to happen. Not literally evolve, but not the wrestling promotion evolve, but it's literally the verb evolve. If it's going to change and morph and go into something better, but I don't know if that's gonna happen or not. But yeah, so much history with TNA in the beginning, and all the things that they've tried and all the things they failed at. I mean, and so many people have tried to go national. I mean, from the old days of the IWA that tried to compete with the WWE and then went down to Mid-Atlantic, and we could talk to David about that, the IWA. That's on YouTube, by the way. It's fascinating stuff if you ever get a chance to see it. They tried to compete. Eddie Einhorn, who just passed away this year, I think it was, tried to compete with Vince Sr. And he had Mil Máscaras as his champion. And Mil, I think, is still, to this day, defends the IWA championship. So forget Fabulous Moolah. Frickin' Mil Máscaras has had a championship for like 40 frickin' years. Oh, by the way, speaking of Moolah, I forgot about this part. If you're a longtime listener to the show, you remember an infamous call that I was getting grief from on Twitter, where someone asked about Moolah and if she was a pimp and she prostituted her girls out and stuff. And, you know, we try to keep this show minivan friendly. And I was like, ixnay on the apron. Well, in the Dee Booher book and the Queen Kong, and you can find it on Amazon at Queen Kong, by the way. Dee Booher tells some fascinating stories about Moolah. And that was one of the things that I always wanted to know about her, is why didn't she go to the WWF or the NWA, or why didn't she, you know, try to do one of those things? And she has a very interesting encounter with the Fabulous Moolah, let's say. And that... she meets the Fabulous Moolah for a meeting in Las Vegas. And let's just say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I want to keep it minivan friendly. But if you are interested in the history of Moolah and kind of the whispers that people don't really talk about too much about Fabulous Moolah and her compound and all of that, Dee Booher, Queen Kong, goes into it quite a bit. So you can find that book. Again, it's a good book. But not family friendly. She did a lot of interesting jobs, a lot of adult jobs, let's say. But yeah, so after a while, you're just like, okay, enough with that. Move on to the wrestling. But she's got a fascinating life. I'm sorry she couldn't be here today, but we'll work on it. Hopefully, we can get her at some point, because I really would like to talk to her, but it is what it is. But that doesn't matter today because we got David Chappell from Mid-Atlantic Gateway, which will be just as fun because we can talk about all the great old memories of Mid-Atlantic and NWA Fan Fest, and there's a lot of things we can cover there. So you can give a call at 515-605-9345. You can tweet me at Jim Valley. You can tweet them at MA Gateway at Twitter, or you can email at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. So coming up in a few minutes, we're going to talk to David Chappell of Mid-Atlantic Gateway here on the Livecast.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
We're back. PW Torch Livecast with Jim Valley, Saturday morning wrestling each and every Saturday from 8:30 on the West Coast to 11:30 on the East Coast. We talk about your memories, what you remember, what you know, and what you love about the days of pro wrestling, when it was still real to you, damn it. You can do that each and every Saturday. You can call in at 515-605-9345. You can find me on Twitter at Jim Valley, or you can email at pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. So all of those ways you can connect with the show. And check it out here each and every Saturday. By the way, I'm going to be gone next Saturday because I've got a wedding down in Florida. And so that's what I'm going to be doing instead of doing the show. But I don't have anybody lined up. I'm going to try to get Queen Kong lined up and see if we can get her on the show. And because she was fascinating. It's a fascinating book. If you have her book, or also if you remember GLOW, the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, and you want to help her out, she has a GoFundMe page. You can find it on Facebook under Matilda T. Hun if you want to help her out with her lupus that she's got going on. But hopefully we'll get her on the show. I really, really want to get her on the show because I find her incredibly fascinating. Plus, like I said, she pulls no punches in her book about sexism and the casting couch and everything. And like I said, if you have strong religious convictions, this may not be the book for you. So I do want to put that out there. It is very adult, and it has a lot, and I do mean a lot, of adult situations. But she always explains everything. I mean, it's not gratuitous. I would say it's sort of like an adult, like a good R-rated movie, like the Wolf of Wall Street or something, where, yeah, at times they do a lot of adult content, but it does have a purpose to explain things, like Boogie Nights or something like that. I would compare her book to something like that. So you can, if you're interested, you can check that out. Also, if you're interested, you can give us a call at 515-605-9345 or tweet at Jim Valley, at Jim Valley, or you can email pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. But coming up on the show today, we're very excited for David Chappell from Mid-Atlantic Gateway. He's going to be joining us here in a few minutes to talk about all of the memories of the Mid-Atlantic with the Crockett territory from Jim Crockett Sr. and Jim Crockett Jr., and we can talk about all of your favorites. We can talk about the tag team match, the famous tag team feud with Jay Youngblood and Rick Steamboat against Don Carnoodle and Sergeant Slaughter, and how that made the way for Starrcade. We can talk about when it was a tag team territory. We can talk about how Johnny Valentine transformed the Mid-Atlantic with his style and changed it from a tag team territory to a singles territory. We can talk about that. We can talk about all of those things and more here this morning on the live cast. As you know, this past year, I was lucky enough, very fortunate in August, to go to the NWA Mid-Atlantic Fan Fest in Charlotte. We saw Bruce Mitchell, and we saw Conrad Thompson, and we saw David Wills and Dave Milliken and so many others, and so many of your favorite stars of years past. And I was lucky enough, just dumb luck, to get to do the Q&As. I got to host the Q&As with everybody, and we got to interview Austin Idol and Mickey James and Jimmy Garvin, who just had a birthday. We got to interview him. Got to interview Lady Blossom, Jeannie Clark, so many other people. Gosh, Magnum TA, Road Warrior Animal. It was a lot of fun. I had a great time being able to interview all those people, Austin Idol and such, and just talk about the glory days and everything. And it's amazing how much people love and remember the Mid-Atlantic times. And all of the times that that were just so memorable, and just, you know, so much of wrestling is your childhood and what you remember from pro wrestling. I mean, I still watch wrestling today, but it's not quite the passion that it used to be. And I remember, you know, when we got cable, it was such a big deal to get Georgia wrestling and then get the Mid-Atlantic wrestling from Georgia, because the Crocketts did the show out of the TBS studios. And, you know, when Don Owen in Portland had his 60th anniversary specials for probably, you know, a couple of years, he brought in a lot of Mid-Atlantic talent. He brought in Magnum TA and Dusty Rhodes and the Road Warriors and just a lot of different people. So we got some of it. And I know that when I think Crockett ran a show in conjunction with Don Owen in Seattle, that one did really big business the first time because of the strong cable and the boom of cable television. And I wonder how much, you know, today's kids, when they watch the network, what that, oh gosh, I remember sitting up and watching the network on my phone. Isn't that funny to say? Isn't that weird to say as I watched it on my device? I wonder how cheap wrestling is going to get. I mean, right now it's $10 a month to watch all the pay-per-views you can. It seems so archaic now. And it sets the price for what you're willing to pay for wrestling. And, you know, it sets the price as far as TNA. You know, they've got their Bound for Glory pay-per-view this weekend. And, you know, I assume it's the regular price. It's, what, $40 or something? And it's like the price is now fixed in your head to pay $9.99 a month or $14 a month or whatever WWE is going to set the network price for that all-you-can-eat buffet of wrestling. And it just seems odd that, you know, TNA, which is having its struggles right now, started in 2002 trying to sell $10 pay-per-views, and you get, you know, an hour and a half for $10. And really, I mean, it was a pretty good deal because you got 6 hours of wrestling a month for $40, as opposed to the WWF at the time, which was charging $30 for 3 hours. So it wasn't the worst deal in the world back then, but now the way we set the prices, it's crazy. What if it's going to get even cheaper? Maybe they'll go to an advertising model or something, maybe. I doubt it. But maybe they will, but I don't think so. Saturday Morning Wrestling with Jim Valley live each and every Saturday here on PW Torch Livecast. We're waiting for David Chappell to call in. I don't know why he's not called in. I don't know what happened to him. Jeez, no one wants to talk to me today. Nobody likes me. I have no friends. I get stood up by Queen Kong. Just trying to help her out. She stands me up. There's probably some connection problem, maybe. Maybe that's what David's issue is. But oh, well, we can still talk some wrestling. You know, as I mentioned on the Way Back Playback, we're watching Starrcade 1999 from the Russo era with they're still the powers that be, and we're watching all, and it's just so much Russo garbage with the women, and it's just awful. But you can listen to my comments with Pat McNeil if you're a VIP member on the Wayback Playback. But we're doing Saturday Morning Wrestling, and joining me right now from the Mid-Atlantic Territory, one of the proprietors of the Mid-Atlantic Gateway. Go to midatlanticgateway.com. It's David Chappell. David, good morning. For you, afternoon.
Hey, Jim. Hey, how are you doing?
Thanks. Hey, I appreciate you. Yeah.
Yeah, I've actually been was on hold for a little while, and the connection was really bad. So I heard you. I heard you talking, and I'm sorry that I wasn't noted as having come through for you. But
it's okay.
You're coming through a lot clearer now. So I'm glad I actually called back.
Good. I'm glad you did. Yeah, there's always issues with Blog Talk. Maybe that's it. Maybe it didn't recognize your phone number, and I didn't see that was you. That was probably what it was because it didn't bring up your. There's always. Seriously. Blog Talk.
No, I know.
Blog Talk's the worst. Seriously.
Hey, but it's wonderful to be with you. It was great to have you in Charlotte as well in August.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was fun to do the Q&As with everybody. I was talking about that. That was a lot of fun. Since you started there, let me just start with this. I got a lot of compliments on it, and that was very nice, and I appreciate that. That was a lot of fun. But the thing that blew me away is how could they not get good people to do the Q&As before? It's like you've got this convention full of wrestling nerds who grew up with all this stuff. You'd think pretty much anybody could interview all these people because they saw all of the wrestling, and then I never really understood that.
Yeah, from what I understand, Jim, you sort of came in at the last minute, and I guess the first one that I saw was with Mickie James, and I heard that you're saying that. I guess you thought Jim Ross was going to be doing it, and then you ended up being the one that was doing it.
Mickie James was running late. I guess she'd spilled coffee on her. She was wearing like a white linen outfit, and she was running late. And JR was in the green room, and she's like, "Come on, JR, let's go." And JR's like, "I'm not booked." And I was like, "Oh, hey, Mickie, I'm Jim, and I'm going to do this with you." And she was like, "Oh. Okay." She was so disappointed. I was like, "Yay!"
Well, was really
so disappointed.
That interview that I got to Charlotte right when that started. I was really really excited about that because Mickie actually went to the same high school that I went to, and actually lived within a few miles of where I live now, and I'd never met her before. So it was really cool. And then I saw you up there, and I guess to answer your question, I know over the years they've been, they've brought a number of folks in to do, different interviews over the course of FanFest, and I think they just hit on somebody in you that, was able to, really strike a good chord with everybody, I thought it went fantastic, and it looks like maybe now we've got a full-time host for these things down the road, which is wonderful.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Yeah, I couldn't believe someone told me a story, and maybe you were there. I don't know, but I guess Tully Arn and Barry did a Q&A, and somebody who was doing the Q&A, I don't know who it was, but they go, "So what titles have you held?" And I guess Tully at that point cut him off and said, "Look, why don't you just go to the Q&A because everybody in this room knows what titles we held."
Yeah, I guess on one like that, that's one that almost you have the horsemen up there. They can sort of do it themselves. But, when you have, folks like you had on this occasion, I know Austin Idol's one of your, one of your favorites. So, he wasn't really a Mid-Atlantic guy per se, but, somebody that really does have sort of the breadth of knowledge, on more of the wrestling golden age other than Charlotte. And, of course, they brought in a lot of folks over the years. So I think, with you having, a good knowledge of the business in the golden age across the board, across the country, I think you can just step right in there and kind of deal with whoever comes down the road. So I thought they were tremendous. And I know they're out there now on a sort of a pay-per-view or a streaming deal. So I'm looking forward to going back and just, reliving them because there was so much going on this year. I had some of my family coming in and trying to keep everything straight. So I'm looking forward to going back and kind of just sitting back and listening to some of those.
Yeah, you can get them on Vimeo. You can get you get all six Q&As, which are basically shoot interviews, and they're all about an hour or so long. And they're all, I'd put them up against pretty much any shoot interview that's out there. I really would. And then you also get the show that night, that weekend, which has Tessa Blanchard against Rachel Ellering. It has George South wrestles. And then the main event, which is just, the main event is so tremendous. It's got Ricky Morton from the Rock and Roll Express and his son against Bobby Fulton and from the Fantastics and his two sons. And Ricky Morton's son is older. I would guess, what is he, maybe 17, 18?
Mm-hmm.
And then Bobby yep. Fulton's sons are like maybe 15 and like maybe 11 or something. And the 11-year-old is this skinny blonde kid, and he was doing the double arm. It's like he was posing like he was Lex Luger. It was hilarious. And they do the main event. They do all of the old school tricks, and the crowd loves it. And it was so great because Bobby Fulton comes out and the crowd cheers it because he's a legend and you cheer the legends. But then by the end of his promo at the beginning of the show, he's able to turn himself heel and he does this great old school heel, you know, telling fans don't chant rock and roll. And of course the fans chant rock and roll and they're of course covering their ears like old school heels. And it's just so much fun. So you get that. And then you also get the roast of Ole Anderson, and then you also get the Hall of Legends as people get inducted into the Hall of Heroes, and you and your partner in crime get inducted, which is tremendous. You and Dick Bourne get inducted. Magnum TA, I think, is the highlight of the show. He gave just an impassioned speech about Dusty Rhodes, which I thought was, I mean, I almost cried. It was so good.
Tremendous. And you know what, it's amazing just the class of people that went in as far as Dusty and Magnum inducting him. Then you had Jimmy Valiant, Baby Doll, Road Warrior, Animal, Jimmy Valiant. It's funny because Jimmy Valiant's become a real good friend, and I actually saw him last Friday in Raleigh. And we just kind of joke around because, you know, he's been telling Dick and I that it was such an honor for him to be inducted with us. And I said, you got to be kidding, man. What are you talking about? And first thing when I went up and saw him in Raleigh was he said, you know, brother, it was such an honor to be inducted with you. And I said, man, you're sticking to that, huh? That's just crazy. But, I mean, it was surreal. It was such a wonderful, wonderful time. The whole thing was, and actually had some communication with Greg Price this week, and I think Greg has finally recovered from putting that thing together, which is just takes so much effort. So I can't wait till next August.
Yeah, we'll see what they have. It's really tremendous how Greg is able to find something new each and every year, which I would think
has
got
to
be the challenge.
He's able to change it up.
Yeah,
that's the challenge. You're right, after that 2004 to the present, so he's been able to mix it up and change it up and keep people interested. And as you've seen, Jim, it's become almost like a family affair for the wrestlers and the fans. And of course, you want to get new people in too. But he really has made it something special. And I was telling people that when we started the Gateway, first couple of years, you know, we would get approached with folks telling us, "Can't you do like a Legends reunion or something like that? Maybe I'll be able to do that." And I think Dick and I pretty much told everybody that it's a wonderful idea, but it logistically can never be done. And of course, luckily Greg's proven us wrong, and it's, you know, keeps on doing it. It's really, I just in awe of what he does. I don't see how he does it, but I'm glad he does.
So, how long have you guys done Mid-Atlantic Gateway?
2000. So we're into 16 years now.
And it's a labor of love for you guys.
Yeah, it sure is, Jim. Both Dick and I, you know, we have what I would consider, you know, regular jobs, such as jobs are. And we just got together sort of at the infancy of the Internet. We did know each other, you know, when the Internet started to really pop. We both happened to be on the same message board, and I think about an angle for Mid-Atlantic, and I responded. And we hit it off from there, and we just a couple of, the year or so after that, we started to thinking about, well, I wonder if maybe we could share some of the stuff with other people. And we certainly had no idea it would get to the point that it's gotten, and, you know, have all the people in the business or a lot of people in the business be interested in it. And you know, it's just, it's been wonderful. It's far surpassed anything that we ever expected. But I mean, our sort of our charge is what it's always been, and that's just to try to keep the memories alive, and hopefully we've done a, you know, a decent job of doing that.
So what can people find? What kind of content is on MidAtlanticGateway.com?
A lot of stuff, Jim. In fact, we actually, the site that's up now that you can find at MidAtlanticGateway.com, I guess that version of the site's been up maybe a year to a year and a half, but earlier our site is the beginnings of the site can be found sort of in an archive version of that at MidAtlanticGateway.net, and there's a link on the current site, but the older site has a lot of content on it, a ton of interviews that I did in the early days of the site. I did more then than I do now, although I'm getting back into doing interviews. But, you know, we bring people in from the business for interviews. We have all kinds of memorabilia that we post. You know, we even bring fans into the mix to, you know, talk about their, you know, recollections of the business. We have newspaper clippings, audio clips. Really, the audio clips, Jim, is sort of what brought Dick and I together. When I was a kid, I would I'd get my cassette recorder and throw it in front of the Mid-Atlantic TV show from 1974 on. So I have all these old audio clips that I've been listening to now for 40 years. So I have a lot better memory than some people because of these clips. But that's been the genesis of a lot of the historical stuff that we do. And, you know, we've gotten videos since then, and you know, folks have given us all kinds of memorabilia that we try to post on the site, you know, take pictures of and such things. So it really is a, you know, a smorgasbord of all things Mid-Atlantic. And it's just a repository where people can go. It doesn't cost anything. And just spend hours and hours on there. It's really almost endless at this point.
So tell me about, it was last weekend they had that big show at the Dorton Arena. And
right.
I remember the Dorton Arena from TV, because you could always tell when they were at Dorton because of the windows. And, you know, to be honest, it's a terrible arena for TV because there's too much natural light and it's backlit and it's awful for television. But, man, it's a gorgeous facility. I mean, it's ahead of its time. It's beautiful. Talk about what it was like to be there that night to be in a historic arena with historic wrestlers and reliving a lot of the memories.
Yeah, the sad thing, Jim, is so many of the older buildings, you know, aren't around anymore, not used. But there are a decent number in the Carolinas and Virginia that actually still are used and standing. And Dorton is one of them. It really is a unique building. In fact, I think any fan of old school wrestling, Dick and I certainly are into the buildings, you know, where all these great memories were housed. And I'm from Richmond, Virginia, which is, you know, about 3 hours from Raleigh. So I never saw shows in the day in Raleigh. It was just too far. But as we got into doing the Gateway, and there are some pieces on the Mid-Atlantic venues that are on the site. And, you know, Dick and I were both lamenting, well, we'd never seen a wrestling match in Dorton Arena before. And I guess probably 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a little longer than that, we just said, you know, we just want to be in the Dorton Arena. So we actually went to an arena football game just to be at Dorton Arena that they held there. But this was the first time we'd actually been where they had wrestling matches. And you're right, it's an amazing looking building. I'm sure it is difficult for television with all the windows, but it really did bring back, you know, the memories of having, of course, Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair were maybe the two big attractions, but you had, you know, a lot of the other folks that were in the same time frame. Ivan Koloff was there, of course. Jimmy Valiant, who I'd mentioned, was there. George South was there. And, of course, you had, you know, newer folks, too. And you had, you know, folks that maybe came in the middle, like Gangrel was there. But it was just, you know, it's just a wonderful, you kind of just soak in all the things that happened in that arena as you're watching the current stuff, you know, go on. But Dorton was a big, you know, a big place for Jim Crockett Promotions, because they had their shows there normally ran on Tuesday nights, and then you had the TV in Raleigh from WRAL on Wednesday nights. So a lot of times there was some tie-in to what happened in Dorton on a Tuesday night to when they came and did TV the next night. That was the Raleigh was the flagship television part of Mid-Atlantic for many, many years till they moved to Charlotte later. and then started doing, you know, remotes at arenas. But yeah, it was about a million degrees. It was really hot, but I, you know, that just shows you how fans didn't care back in the day. You know, it didn't matter. It was not the most comfortable place to be, and the wrestling made up for that.
We're talking with David Chappell from MidAtlanticGateway.com. Coming up on the live cast, I want to ask him about what he thinks the quintessential angles are in the history of Mid-Atlantic. And I also want to get his opinion, and maybe he can help me on this, about there's one Mid-Atlantic legend that I just don't get. We'll talk about that and more coming up here on the live cast.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the every single day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. It takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
The PW Torch Livecast in Trim Valley, Saturday morning wrestling, each and every Saturday morning here on the Livecast. We're talking with David Chappell from Mid-Atlantic Gateway. And what would you consider to be the quintessential, the moment, or you could even pick two, in Mid-Atlantic wrestling history?
Jim, I think I'll pick two. One sort of selfishly, because it's sort of the angle that at least got Dick Bourne and I together, and sort of, you know, that light went on for the same angle for us at the same time, even though we didn't know each other. And then I think there's one that's probably maybe a little more universally thought of as being the angle that really sort of put Mid-Atlantic way up on the top of the totem pole, so to speak. But the angle that got Dick and I hooked was back in mid-75 when Wahoo McDaniel and Paul Jones made a run at the Gene and Ole Anderson for the World Tag Team Championships. And Paul and Wahoo won the title in May of that year. They had a held the belts. They'd been going around for a couple of months, but the Paul and Wahoo won the belts, held them for two or three weeks probably. And then there was a TV match, I think the first time it ever happened, for the titles on television, where the Andersons were against Paul and Wahoo for the belts, and they won the belts back based on one of the Andersons throwing the other's head into, they call it the supreme sacrifice angle, where actually one of the Andersons sacrificed himself. Wahoo got thrown into the head of one of the Andersons, and basically it knocked the other Anderson out, but they were able to win the belt back in that way, sacrificing a partner, basically. And that was just such a wonderful match. It just hooked Dick and I completely on the product. And Paul and Wahoo chased the belts for several months after that, never got them back. But that whole summer was just some wonderful matches between those four. But I think the bigger angle that probably most people draw to is when Ric Flair in Blackjack Mulligan in 78, Blackjack actually turned face during an angle where, I guess it's affectionately called the hat and robe angle, where Blackjack tore up Ric Flair's robe. Rick had torn up a hat that Willie Nelson had given Blackjack, and that was a TV angle where Blackjack turned on, well, Rick actually just baited Blackjack, and Blackjack turned face during that and had a great run for a number of years as a good guy. But Blackjack chased that belt for quite a while, and they had a bounty that was put on Blackjack for a couple of months by Flair, and of course, bounty hunters came in and out trying to collect the bounty. And but that was probably the angle that George Scott did that really set the territory on fire, and I think that went, you know, into the 80s, really, before things really cooled down a lot. But that the hat and robe angle in 1970, probably the what most people, I think, consider the greatest Mid-Atlantic angle.
I just remember reading all the magazines as a kid and so much coverage that the Mid-Atlantic got. It was pretty much WWF and Mid-Atlantic and then a little bit of Florida and AWA, and it just made it seem like it was just, you know, the place to be, and in a lot of ways it was. One of the things you mentioned, Ric Flair, that era, I remember vividly that picture of Ric Flair that they took where he's racing out of the dressing room with his baseball bat after his interview where he claimed that he was going to retire, and just that look on Flair's face and everything, and that picture is just tremendous.
Yeah, that was soon after the promotion started going out to the arenas to tape. That probably had happened 3 or 4 months before then, so they were in a remote location. And yeah, that was when Rick was basically another bounty situation. There, Harley Race had come in and put a bounty on Flair, and Harley was the champion at that point. And then I believe it was Bob Orton Jr. and Dick Slater. Orton turned on Flair with Slater's help to try to get the bounty. And part of that deal was, I think Rick had the neck brace on at that point in time, and he had the baseball bat. And that was sort of a memorable image because, if I recall, they teased that he was going to retire. He just couldn't get over the neck injury. And, of course, he had everybody fooled, and he tore that neck brace off and pulled out the baseball bat. And that sort of signaled really the lead-up to Starrcade 83 of Flair for the gold. So that was a pretty big deal. And yet nobody could get fired up and show it the way Rick could in those kind of situations. It was really... he was great. I mean, I think he was as great as he was as a heel. I think he was a little bit underrated as a babyface, because at that point he was the good guy who was chasing the championship, and they were putting all these impediments in front of him and big bounty, and he wasn't going to be deterred. And as it turned out, a couple months later, you know, he won that historic cage match in Greensboro.
Now, a lot of people don't understand, but before Starrcade, there was a Thanksgiving show every year. It was just they made it bigger and decided to brand it as Starrcade. But there was always wrestling on Thanksgiving night, was there not?
Yeah, Thursdays were really big in the Carolinas and Virginia, like you say, Jim, for many years before there was a Starrcade. Greensboro card on Thanksgiving, and they were really mega events. But actually, Crockett ran, you know, other towns on Thanksgiving, and a lot of those Thanksgiving shows involved a town that's pretty close to me, Norfolk, Virginia. They typically had a Thursday night Thanksgiving show too, which was pretty big. And if you go back and look, you know, even if you go on our site and look at some of the memorabilia we have from Thanksgiving, but I believe Dick actually did a piece that's up there on the site, at least in the, you know, in an archive form anyway, of the Thanksgiving shows over the years for Crockett. And I think the fans would be shocked to go and look and see how great the cards were, say, at the same time, same day, in Greensboro and then in Norfolk. It was a huge deal, and you're right, it sort of morphed into Thanksgiving was sort of a natural time or day for a huge card, because they were never called Starrcade, of course, but that tradition really continued. And it became Starrcade, you know, for a number of years. And, of course, Starrcade in the early days did stay in Greensboro, and there was some consistency there. But I think the fans there, I think Bruce Mitchell will tell you that that was probably the biggest card of every year.
Well, I'm not saying Bruce Mitchell was old, but the first Thanksgiving wrestling show he went to had pilgrims.
You said it, Jim. I didn't.
Yeah, I know. I love to run Bruce Mitchell, mainly because it's easy and true. So there was one guy. I mean, in every territory has, like, their local heroes and their local flavor. A guy who didn't necessarily go anywhere else but was a big star in that area and didn't translate. And for me, the guy that I don't get, and maybe you could explain it, I'm not blaming him or saying he's terrible or anything, but I never got, and as I can see him in all of his past stuff, I still don't get it. He had the double chin, he had kind of a terrible body, but Johnny Weaver, can you explain Johnny Weaver to me? Because I don't get it.
Jim, Johnny Weaver was, in a lot of ways, I think, I don't know if anybody else calls him this, but I've always called him this, Mr. Mid-Atlantic.
Right. Yeah, but, yeah, huge. Yeah, big deal.
Yeah, but Johnny's saga is an interesting one, Jim. When I first started, not really, you know, watching wrestling to the point that I became hooked, you know, and then, you know, wanted to do a website kind of deal, just when I was very, very young, Johnny was really one, if not the biggest personas in the Crockett territory. At that point, we're talking about 60s, early 70s. It was really a tag team focus, and Johnny, you know, started out teaming with George Becker way back. They went into the, I think 71 was Becker's last year, but Johnny was a big deal as a tag team hand, and he also, you know, was a very good singles performer too, but he was in that era, mid late 60s into the early 70s, he was a huge deal on the tag team side. Now, when George Scott came in and sort of revamped the territory, Johnny then, and I don't want to diminish, he had runs in singles too. I mean, he had a number of world title matches in the 60s and early 70s, but when Scott came in and sort of changed the focus, and Johnny at that point had, you know, some age on him. When people think of the sort of the heyday of the Mid-Atlantic area, Johnny at that point was really more of a mid-card wrestler. However, pretty much every year he would be in an angle of some consequence. The people that followed Crockett will remember he and Baron Von Raschke had a claw versus sleeper thing. In the early 80s, he had some heat and had some really good program with Lord Alfred Hayes. Even into 1984, he was the ultimate assassin, where he put on, you know, one of the assassin's masks for a while. So there was something every year. Then Johnny got into the announcing part. He did one of the shows starting in the early 80s. He was a co-host with Rich Landrum on Worldwide Wrestling. Later into the mid 80s, he was with David Crockett, on Worldwide Wrestling. So he was an announcer. He also worked in the office for a long time, and behind the scenes. So he did a little bit of everything. I guess to answer your question, I think a lot of his appeal was from folks who had been watching a long time, and just he was somebody that was in your living room all the time. He was sort of the quintessential good guy. He was never a heel. He was always a good guy. He was always the underdog. He pretty much told everybody, Jim, that, you know, I don't go to other places. I like it here in the Carolinas. And he, you know, the people sort of felt the same way. He was their guy. Even when people started following the Flairs and the Valentines and the Mulligans, and Weaver was still always sort of in the mix. And, you know, his popularity never really waned. It just sort of was put in different areas. He wasn't working main events a lot, didn't hold titles a lot, although he held a few in the 70s, later 70s, early 80s. But no, he wasn't going to woo anybody with his, his physique or his strength. He was good on interviews. He wasn't the greatest. He just sort of became, I guess, longevity. The gym has a lot to do with it. If you remember, he took it all the way to 87 when he was Dusty's right-hand man in the 1987 match with Luger and Dusty. I guess he was the keeper of the cage, and that was sort of his last angle. But he was always there. He always had his hand in something, and the fans just he was just a consistent person that was always there. And it's like, you know, if he's not there, it's not the same. And But yeah, Johnny became actually a real close friend. Gateway got going, and in fact, before I called, I was just checking, and his daughter had just posted something on Facebook, and she was there, Wendy, at the at FanFest this year, and we had a couple meals together. Just a wonderful lady, and Johnny was a great guy. Finished up his time; he was a deputy sheriff in Charlotte, and one of the greatest memories I'll ever have of FanFest, Jim, was Rip Hawk and Sweet Hansen against George Becker and Johnny Weaver was the big feud for years in Crockett before really the Mid-Atlantic got going. But Rip and Johnny had not seen each other in years, and we were able to, with the help of a number of friends, get them together at a FanFest. And it was just a wonderful, these two old adversaries meeting again. We got them together for a breakfast during FanFest. And Johnny was so devoted to his job that he had difficulty making the gig, the breakfast, because he didn't want to miss his shift. He was a correction, basically transported prisoners in from Mecklenburg County in Charlotte. So we finally got those two together. And I think that might be one of my best ever FanFest moments, even though it technically was not in the FanFest building, but it was... because of that, we got those two legends together. But, yeah, Johnny, I think, everybody, it's hard for anybody to have a bad word to say about Johnny Weaver. He did a little bit of everything.
Yeah, and I'm certainly not bad-mouthing him. I was just like, what's the appeal? I don't get it. But, I mean, there's every territory had sort of their local guy who didn't necessarily do great guns anywhere else but was huge in the territory back in the territory days. We're talking with David Chappell from Mid-Atlantic Gateway, and coming up, we'll talk obviously some Starcade memories, we'll talk some live show memories, and also I'm curious if there's any on the website, as people talk, if there are any great Mid-Atlantic controversies. We'll talk about it next here on the Livecast.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
Back on the live cast with Jim Valley and David Chappell from Mid-Atlantic Gateway, one of the key historians of the Mid-Atlantic Territory in the Carolinas and such. But David, I'm just curious, is there any, on your website, is there any great controversy or point of contention among fans of classic Mid-Atlantic wrestling?
I don't know if
or do you all just get along, it's all perfect?
Well, the site sort of is in the realm of being more of a historical site, as far as portraying things and showing things the way that they sort of went down, as they happened in the Crockett territory. Some of the interviews that we do that I've done, I actually. Dick allows me to do most of the interviews. He does so much work on the site. It seems like the least thing I could do would be to do the interviews, which I really enjoy doing. A lot of it comes from those interviews, Jim, as to when some of those things sort of pop up. I'll tell you one that kind of hit me by surprise a little bit. About 2 weeks ago, I had some dealings with Ricky Steamboat before, but not to a large degree, but I was lucky enough to have a long chat with him, and the interview has just been up in the last couple of weeks, sort of promoting or help setting the stage for him coming back to the Carolinas last week in Raleigh and Spartanburg and Morganton. But it's interesting when you go into the just sort of the historical stuff, a lot of the guys will sort of on their own bring up some things that really, I didn't know happened. And one of the things that Ricky mentioned in the interview was we got to talking about the it was outside sort of the Mid-Atlantic time frame, but we're all wrestling fans, so we anything I think is interesting when Ricky Steamboat says it. But we were talking about the trilogy of matches with him and Flair in 89, and he got into talk to that, and then mentioned on the final match in Nashville where they Rick won the belt back, and then the the program segue to Terry Funk, for the rest of that year, where Funk attacked him after the match. But, you know, Steamboat just told me that, he had no idea what was going to go down with Terry Funk. Nobody told him. Rick didn't tell him. And when the thing went down where, Rick got piled driven by Funk, he had no idea. He expected a long run of rematches. So, I never heard that before. And, some of the, and he seemed a bit, obviously he's well over it now, but that's something that I think he thought he was going to get his run of rematches, and he never did, and nobody ever smartened him up to it. And he watched it go down like the rest of us. And I think if you look at some of our interviews, those kind of things come out as well. In some of those where the guys just bring that up themselves. A couple of things that I think are sort of controversial, Jim, and they really don't have answers, or at least one of them doesn't have a real answer. But back in 1977, the whole thing when they had the plane crash where Ric Flair got injured, and Johnny Valentine was injured to the point he never wrestled again. Blackjack Mulligan was brought in some respects, sort of be Blackjack's replacement, the top heel in the company, and plan always was for Flair to take that spot, and the question was when that would happen. And so we get 2 years removed from the plane crash, and sort of out of the blue, this would be about this time of the year, 1977, we started getting these promoted matches where Blackjack is coming back to the area. He went to Japan for a little while, came back, and at that point he's still a heel, Rick's still a heel, and Blackjack says, "I'm coming after my title. And I don't care who has it." So you had these promoted matches between Rick and Blackjack. And I think people around the territory say, holy cow, they're going to actually wrestle each other, fight each other. And so everybody just got, it was like the second coming, my God, these buildings aren't going to be able to hold it. Well, what happened was, before that ever happened, of course, these things were promoted in a number of big towns. Before that happened, there was a switch to Ricky Steamboat. Rick dropped the belt to Ricky Steamboat. So when people got to these arenas expecting this mega match between Rick and Blackjack, well, it was at that point, Ricky had won the belt. So it was a huge come down, not to take anything from Ricky Steamboat, but it became a match that didn't feature Blackjack and Rick. And they held off doing that until, when we talked about the Hat and Robe later, that was about 6 or 8 months later when they actually pulled the trigger and had the split between, Rick and Blackjack. So that, I never asked George Scott about what the deal was, why they pulled back on that, but that was pretty controversial. A lot of unhappy people with that. And the other thing, Jim, I'll mention, I don't know if it's controversial, but it's something that from one of our interviews I thought was really interesting. People that follow the Mid-Atlantic, and sort of during the period of time of the national expansion in 84, there was a really, really memorable angle where Ric Flair was having trouble with a newly turned heel, Wahoo McDaniel and Tully Blanchard. And Rick wanted to get some help, and he went, had a couple of vignettes, which were really unusual then. They actually went down and filmed these things in Florida, but the deal supposedly was that Rick went down to see Blackjack, had to go down to where Blackjack was, and Blackjack was around a campfire with a bunch of his family, which turned out actually to be Dusty was one of the guys, and Nelson Royal was one of the guys. But in any event, it was portrayed as his family. Rick goes down there in a suit and tie, and it looks like it's 100 degrees, and they have a campfire, and Rick says, "Blackjack, I need you back, and want you back, can you come and help me?" And so they teased it for a while, and Blackjack finally decided. They did a special, another vignette where he answers Rick and says, "I'll be down to help you with Wahoo and Tully." And again, everybody was just so excited about the fact that Blackjack, he hadn't been in the territory for about 3 years, and Blackjack was a huge draw in the Carolinas. And so again, everybody was looking for the reuniting of Rick and Blackjack, and it occurred, but it only occurred for a week or so, and then Blackjack got a call from New York and decided to go up to back to the WWF at that point. And so that was cut short. And one of the interviews I did with Blackjack, and he didn't have many regrets, but he told me that one of the biggest regrets he had is the fact that he did not stay in Charlotte and did not keep that thing going. And then, of course, you know, later. That wasn't that far from, you know, when things got cooking with the horsemen and that type of thing. You got to wonder how that would have gone if Blackjack had been around in Charlotte for that, you know, to perhaps take place. But not really a controversy, but I think that's one that I know that Blackjack told me that he just kicked himself as, you know, why he went and did not stay around and recreate some of that magic that they had in the 70s and 80s and you know, went up to New York and things didn't really, you know, develop for him up there, you know, later in the 80s. So there are just a couple things that come to mind.
You know, it's, you mentioned the vignettes with Flair on the campfire with Blackjack, and you can see that on YouTube. It's part of a playlist that goes on for several hours. It's called 1984, A Year of Transition. And basically, yeah, it's sort of they mean literally transition, because things are shifting to the pay-per-view model that we had for so many years. Crockett is shifting to a national competitor. And also, there's a shift because Dusty Rhodes is coming in as booker. You watch these videos, and I've talked about them on the air, and I'm glad you're here to talk about them, David. Is, you know, not only does it have Flair and his polyester slacks sitting around this campfire with Blackjack Mulligan, and Dusty's like, he's twitching or drinking like a beer. He's like just sipping and sipping and sipping. It's very awkward. But it also, you could also see, you mentioned Rick Steamboat, and things that Rick didn't know is that, you know, Rick was the big baby face in Carolinas, and at the end of Starrcade 83, the Flair for the Gold, when they're in the locker room, Flair says, "I owe you, Ricky, for the help that he gave him in his quest to win the championship from Harley Race." But that was supposed to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was supposed to be foreshadowing for Starrcade 84, that the original plan was Flair and Steamboat for Starrcade 84, and then Dusty comes in, and let's just put it this way, you can go into more detail, but the career trajectory for Ricky Steamboat, his career plan with Dusty in charge, Dusty at the helm, changed dramatically.
Yeah, that's very true, and that's not something that that Ricky and I got into in our interview. But Ricky's been pretty, he said it, you know, pretty pointedly that when and not anything that was sort of matter of factly. I mean, he just saw the handwriting on the wall when Dusty came in. You're exactly right, Jim. It was just Ricky saw again the way things were going, and he just did not. I think he believed that the ceiling had been lowered, and he really wasn't looking if he had stayed to really go the direction he wanted to. So I think that's very fair to say, because I think Ricky said it, that once Dusty got the book, it was just a different dynamic. You had a lot of people from Florida brought in, and you know, Dusty had a number of his favorites, and Ricky was not necessarily one of those. And I think that really was the reason that and you got to remember, Jim, Ricky had been, you know, Rick had been in the Carolinas at that point for eight years. So, you know, maybe for that reason he felt it was time to go too. But I know he said that he just didn't see things developing. Everything on the good guy side sort of revolved around Dusty, and he just knew he wasn't going to be able to go but so far, and I think that's why he made the move. But, yeah, I mean, that would have been a natural. I mean, anything between Flair and Steamboat was going to be gold. But it was just when Dusty came in, things changed very, very significantly. And, you know, a lot of it for the better. You know, some people say a lot of it for the worse, ultimately. But it was different, no question about that. And I don't think Ricky thought he was going to be part of that mix.
Now, as a fan watching this stuff at 84, did you understand what was happening? Or were you confused as why is Rick Steamboat struggling now with Tully Blanchard? And why is he losing so much? And what's going on here? Did you have enough inside information to know what was happening?
Calling it a year of transition, and I'm the same way, Jim. I've looked at those clips over and over. It's a great reference point, actually, on the internet, on YouTube. But 84 was a very, very different year. I never forgot back in, I guess it was spring of 84, Richmond always ran the Crockett always ran the Richmond Coliseum. That was the big venue in my town. But you get into the early part of 1984, and we started getting WWF on our UHF station, and they started running shows at the old Richmond Arena back in the day, and I'm thinking, what in the world? And, you know, I read the After magazines like everybody else and got a sense as to something was going on, you know. But and then as you go through 84 and you start seeing a lot of people popping up that were in Crockett, you know, Greg Valentine and Roddy Piper and pretty big names, you know, end up going up there. Then you have all the Florida people coming here to Crockett. Obviously, something was changing. I didn't really have an idea at that point that, you know, Vince was making his national push and all these other territories were starting to go by the wayside. But it was a very different, you know, different dynamic. And, you know, the first time that really I'd been able to watch the WWF, because they were actually on our television really for the first time. And it was, what struck me was just the very, very different styles of the two. You know, the Crockett style was still sort of the physical action-based style, and the, you know, the WWF was, you know, certainly more of a entertainment-based style, which, you know, each has its own appeal, but it was certainly very, very different. And my thoughts were, Jim, you know, these guys don't have a chance down here. This WWF stuff's just not going to fly down here. And I didn't go to any of the shows, but I still remember Jesse Ventura was on top. Ivan Putski, I think they were the matches. Not enough to make me take notice that, you know, what are they doing down here? You know, I don't think the product with Crockett changed so much other than the fact that we were losing, you know, people were leaving and going to New York. That was clear. And, you know, all these other people that I didn't know where they came from, but it did seem like a lot of the people that were coming in, you know, seemed to be being pushed, whereas, you know, some of the other older Mid-Atlantic people that had been there for years, all of a sudden you just didn't see them anymore, like Rufus Jones, you know, Jay Youngblood, some of these people about the time that the people from Florida were coming in, these other people, you just didn't see them anymore. And then, you know, people like Steamboat and some of the people that had been on top seemed to be sort of stagnating. In other words, they were sort of just staying the course. So yeah, you knew something was going on. I didn't have any, you know, real knowledge as to the depth and the breadth of the change. But yeah, it was very different, very, you know, it was unmistakable. Something was going on.
Hey, we talked briefly before we wrap up here, David. I talked briefly before I came on the air about the IWA in the early to mid-70s, where they had they tried to run against Vince. Eddie Einhorn from Chicago tried to run against Vince and the WWF. And then when things kind of went south and he couldn't get into places, they sort of transitioned their home from the Northeast down to the Mid-Atlantic area. Did you live through much of that? Did you pay attention to the IWA in that time?
Yeah, I sure did. That's a similar deal, Jim. You really hit on, you know, the two invasions, so to speak, during my recollection of being, you know, in the middle of Jim Crockett Promotions in Mid-Atlantic. The WWF, you know, much later in 84 was the one, but the first one was the IWA. And that's something that we were able to get into, and there's some things up on the site, the Gateway, about that. And we were able to dig and find out a little more than certainly I knew at the time. But yeah, it was a big deal. I didn't realize it was such a big deal to Crockett at the time, you know, until we started, you know, we created the site and started looking into what happened. But just as a fan, I remember in 1975, during the early part of that year, all of a sudden, you know, I look at the TV grid and I see, you know, wrestling on a different channel than Channel 6, where we got Crockett for all the years. And I turned it on, and holy cow, it's, you know, there were some people that were on the roster wrestling that had just been in Crockett. And for years, like Rip Hawk, we talked about, you know, the big adversary of Johnny Weaver. Rip Hawk had been in the Carolinas for 10, 12 years, was a huge person here. You had Thunderbolt Patterson was with him. You had Ivan Koloff, who had just left. He was with him. And unlike the WWF, when I saw those people, I'm thinking, man, they've got some talent. And they ran, actually, Jim, at the State Fairgrounds in Richmond, which had been for years before they put up the Coliseum. That's where all the cards were held in the 50s and the 60s and the early 70s. And the IWA went to the Virginia State Fairgrounds. And I'm thinking, you know, I looked at their product, and, you know, on TV it didn't translate quite as well. You know, it didn't have that intimate setting like the WRAL studios. It was a bigger arena. The announcers seemed a little more corporate, I guess, for lack of a better phrase. Not our buddy Bob Cottle, who was like the person we let in our living rooms for Mid-Atlantic for many years. But still, the talent did, you know, did catch me. I'm thinking, this is a pretty big deal. And they ran, Jim, for probably, you know, big time, running every couple of weeks for maybe 3 or 4 months. We got into the fall, and all of a sudden the TV slot on the other channel started, you know, going to like 1 and 2 a.m. in the morning, and you realize that, some, you know, it probably wasn't going to take. But, you know, they did run opposite Crockett. They couldn't get into the Crockett buildings for the most part. And we found out later that there was a lot of behind the scenes to keep them out of the buildings by Jim Crockett. But they were a threat, and I didn't realize at the time how big a threat they were locally. But there is we have a couple of pieces up on the website that I think people might be interested in, to the links that Jim Crockett went to try to cut off this threat. And one of them, Jim, and I would just direct people to the website to be completely accurate, but I believe the date was February 20th of 75, and just make a long story short, the IWA was at that point, I think, really looking to come in and do something, and Crockett took it very seriously. And what they did was put on a couple of shows almost simultaneously. I believe they were shows in Charlotte and Greensboro, where they even ran talent up and down the road very quickly to try to thwart a show that the IWA was running. But I remember that day they brought in, the world champion, Briscoe, you know, loaded up a couple of cards to run against IWA at the same time. And that continued for at least during the spring and summer of 75. And I think there was some, you know, I'm an attorney, and usually I jump on this stuff, but I do think there was there may have been some legal wranglings on some things too. I'm not sure the depth of that, but long story short, it was a big threat for the promotion. And like I say, we have a couple of things on the website to kind of get into some of the history of that and the details, but it was definitely taken seriously. And I think, you know, the people that crossed over, so to speak, in that time frame, and there were a couple, were not thought of real highly by, you know, the Crocketts and people that were close to the Crocketts for quite a few years. So it was on the surface, it didn't seem like a big deal for fans, but for the promotion, it was a really big deal. And I did not go to one of the IWA shows, but boy, they were loaded, Jim. They had some great talent.
Do you think, is Ric Flair the biggest star in Mid-Atlantic wrestling history?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think there's much doubt. He was, you know, he was our own, Jim, when he won the world title in 81. It was sort of like, you know, the hometown hero makes good. I think we were sorry to lose him when he was, you know, he started touring. But I think, you know, we claimed him as our own. And, God, there were so many great ones, but I think it would be hard to say that anybody, you know, surpassed Rick. I mean, he came in 74, pretty much stayed in the territory straight through till he won the world title in September of 81. And then, you know, he continued to be very, you know, much tied into the promotion, even when he was champion. And then, of course, when he lost it, he came back to the Carolinas. And so, you know, I don't know whether he claimed us. I think he did, but we certainly claimed him. And it was really cool to have somebody of that stature. And then when he won the world belt, I think everybody kind of puffed their chest out and said, yeah, we told you. You know, Mid-Atlantic was the best territory, and that's open to debate. But Rick was certainly, he was the man, and still is.
David Chappell, we'll have to have you on again. And please, if there's anything we can do to promote anything you're doing at MidAtlanticGateway.com, just let me know. I'm happy to help out whenever I can, man. Is there anything else we should talk about you want to promote, you want to mention that before we wrap things up?
Yeah, I appreciate that, Jim. I just want to thank you for, I mean, what's better than talking about wrestling on a Saturday for folks that, you know, are fans of the old school product, and that we all collectively thank you for keeping the memories alive with this type of show on a Saturday. It's just wonderful that it's the perfect thing to discuss the old school on a Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon. There are a couple of things I'd like to mention real quick if I can. For our site, I think our primary site, the current site, is sort of in a blog format, but that can be found at midatlanticgateway.com. There's a link on the site, the current site, that can send you back to the archival part of our site that goes back about 13, 14 years, but that can also be accessed directly at midatlanticgateway.net. That's the older site. We're on Twitter at MA Gateway. We're on Facebook at Mid-Atlantic Gateway. That's spelled out in full. I'm on Facebook, just on my personal Facebook, and it's mostly wrestling related, just David Chappell, Chappell. I'm on Twitter at dchapp, dchapp, 3571. And if anybody ever wants to just email me about old school stuff, Jim, what I'm doing now is just some articles on spot show venues in the Carolinas, where a lot of us went when they weren't hitting the big towns. And what I'm doing is getting memories and recollections. And if people have any memorabilia from going to those spot shows, we're doing articles on those, which I think is pretty cool. Some of my best memories are from some of the high school gyms and such stuff. But folks can email me with anything in that regard at dchapp, D-C-H-A-P-P, 3571 at AOL.com. My site partner, Dick Bourne, does a wonderful job with doing so much on the site, but he's also written a number of great books that are based on the Crockett promotion. I just want to, if I could, just run through them really, really quickly, and they're all on our website.
Sure, no problem.
He is a big-time into championship belts, as am I, but I don't have the knowledge that he does. He has just done some great stuff with the World Heavyweight Championship belts for the NWA. But we actually have 5 books up on the site. I think anybody who enjoys old school, particularly NWA old school, might want to check these out. One, we did a yearbook for the year 1975, which is when Dick and I first met, as far as wrestling in our minds anyway, of what went on back in that year. So we've got a yearbook which covers really all of the matches, all of the angles that occurred back then, photos. There was Mid-Atlantic magazines, which were published by the promotion. Les Thatcher did them back then. Wonderful. They're in there in full. We actually got Greg Price, Jim, actually got us George Scott's day planner for the year 1975. So we were able to go through that day by day, to go through all the towns, all the attendants, all the gates, and that's in there as well. So there's a book on that, a yearbook on 1975. Dick has done a book on the Jim Crockett Promotions U.S. Championship, which was the big belt in the area from 75 through 88. That's the history of the lineage. Even WWE takes it back to 1975. That's a great historical timeline book. Dick's done a book called Big Gold, which is basically a history of the world title, the NWA world title from 86 to 2000. He's done a book, The 10 Pounds of Gold, which is an earlier version of the NWA title that Briscoe, Terry Funk, et cetera, wore. Another great book, great pictures. And maybe my favorite of them all, Jim, is he's done a timeline book on the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, the Anderson Brothers. And it's a wonderful history of all of the Anderson family from back in the 60s to, well up and including Arn Anderson is maybe the last Anderson, but it's a great timeline book, and I think folks that enjoy, the Anderson family would really enjoy that. And finally, Jim, I just wanted to mention, we're real proud to be assisting our friend Conrad Thompson, who I know was on the show as well, who co-hosts a great podcast with Ric Flair, the Ric Flair Show. But the Mid-Atlantic Gateway is helping in the This Week in History segment of that, and we're a sponsor of that, so I would hope everybody would check out Rick's podcast, and we're happy to be trying to lend some historical portions to that too. And they do a great segment every podcast on Rick in a historical context, so I encourage people to check that out as well.
Yeah, that's fun. It's a great segment. Well, David, I appreciate it. I hope everyone checks out midatlanticgateway.com, and we'll get you or Dick on again sometime. I'm a big belt fan as well. not a fetish guy like Bruce Mitchell says, but I love the championship belt. So we'll have to talk championship belt sometime. But thank you for being on the show.
Oh, Jim, it's my pleasure. And again, it was great. Did a great job in Charlotte. I look forward to getting to see more of you this go around. But again, thanks for everything you do to keep the memories alive.
My pleasure, man. We'll talk to you soon. This is David Chappell joining us live from the Mid-Atlantic Territory, talking about MidAtlanticGateway.com. So be sure and check that out when you get a chance. It's a great website. I know sometimes Bruce Mitchell does some writing for it. All right, kids, I will talk to you in a couple of weeks and hopefully get Queen Kong back on again. Sorry about that. But David was awesome, and hopefully we'll chat with him again. Until next time, I will talk to you later.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.